Blog Talk Radio.
We didn't talk about stocks. We didn't talk about saving every day. It was more so consumption. What do we need to buy? What sales can we get out there? It wasn't let's save, let's invest, let's multiply, let's grow together as a unit so that we can invest in other assets. It was mainly this is what we have, and this is what we are going to buy with that. This is how we're going to allocate our money, and that's it.
So having that kind of background of being the oldest one and the responsible one with money, do you think that played a large part in why you became a CPA?
Well, my mom told me that I should study accounting, so that's why I became a CPA. I was good at math, and my mom said, I think you would be really good in accounting, because my mom was the bookkeeper for the family. She did the taxes. She did the bookkeeping. She did all of those financial tasks. And so she thought I would be great with that as well. So she recommended I take accounting classes in high school. Once I got in the accounting world, I met mentors and professionals from Big Four accounting firms, and they were saying, okay, if you are going to do accounting, you want to be a CPA. You want to go to the highest level. So before I entered college, I knew that, hey, this is my game plan. I'm going to take the necessary classes in order to become a certified public accountant.
And did you become an accountant as like your first job coming out of college?
Yes. So I had accounting internships starting my freshman year of college. So I had over 5 internships. I worked in financial services and with Big Four accounting firms.
How long did it take for you, actually, before I ask that question, when you were working as an accountant, a public accountant, being a CPA, what at that point did you know about investing, either professionally or personally?
Yeah, so when I got my first job at a Big Four accounting firm when I was 19. I started working with one of the Big Four. I knew nothing about investing, but I did take finance classes, and I would hear how we should manage the financial statements so that investors can rely on our information. But it didn't really dawn on me that I could be an investor too until I realized that some of my colleagues in school were investing. And so finally, fast forward 2 years later, I asked them, hey, how do you do this? What type of account do you have? What do I invest in? And I got started.
And when you say you asked your classmates, are these undergrad classmates, grad school classmates?
Undergrad.
Okay. One of the reasons why I asked the question is because a lot of times when you don't know, you may think that somebody that's good with money knows everything about money. But as you can attest, we have a lot of CPAs and people that are professional accountants. And even though they know how to build a financial statement or even audit a financial statement, it doesn't mean that they know how to read those financial statements from the perspective of an investor.
That is so true. Investing is not a part of your curriculum. Personal finance is not a part of your curriculum when you're studying accounting. And people think that you naturally know everything about money, but that's not the case. A lot of the people that I've worked with and taught investing to, they were accountants because this is not taught in school, right? And I do feel that everybody needs this education because no matter what you studied, no matter where you worked, we haven't been able to connect the dots and realize that we can use this in our personal life.
And when did those dots start to connect for you? I know you mentioned that about 2 years into working for a Big Four, you asked, some prior classmates about investing. But did they also tell you about your 401k plan? I mean, what specifically were they putting you on to?
No, they just told me how to open a taxable brokerage account. Now, I did have a Roth IRA at that time because in high school, my teacher told us, hey, before you graduate college, we weren't even in college. He said, before you graduate college, look into the Roth IRA. You will get tax-free income during retirement. I was like, I don't understand much about retirement and what's going on there, but it sounds good, so let me open an account. My mistake was I opened an account, but I put very little in there because I didn't realize, I didn't understand the purpose of maxing out my account and putting enough in. And I didn't invest the money because I did not have the money with a brokerage firm. I had it with a bank. And so 5-7 years later, my return, well, it was pretty much not a return. It was non-existent. It was interest on my money. And that was a big learning lesson for me later on about the power of investing when I realized I put my money in this account that could be used for investing, could have grown my money, but I didn't understand the ins and outs of investing and how to use that account in order to make it happen. So I missed out on years of compounding.
Thank you for being so vulnerable to share, you know, that part, because those are the things that we want guests to share, the different stages of their knowledge and learning along the way, because you don't, when you get into this world, you don't know it all immediately. You don't even know it all within the first year. Like, you took the advice of your teacher to open up a Roth IRA, and so many of us right now, as you know, with social media and so many articles that are coming out, there's so much information saying, hey, open up a Roth IRA. And there was a study that came out from Ally that talked about they have so many retirement accounts that people open and don't fund.
Yep.
Then they have a next higher percentage of people that open up and fund and don't invest. So how long ago, just from a time perspective, not to give away your age, but how long ago, you know, was this 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Because the other thing, too, is the Roth IRA has only really been around for less than 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Roth IRA is fairly new. For me, oh, man, it wasn't until seven years ago that I started investing in my Roth. Yeah, 6 or 7 years ago. So I was so consumed with life and doing financial statements for everybody else, I never even stopped to think about how is my money working for me. Because I was getting the safety net of a paycheck every 2 weeks that shut me up and shut my brain down. So I didn't even ask the questions because my attention was somewhere else. But as soon as I left my job, I quit my job in 2015, that exposed me to another world and showed me the learning opportunities that I needed in order to navigate this world in a new way.
Wow. Let's go back to when you was working at the accounting firm and you opened up the brokerage account. Was that all that you did at that time, or kind of walk us through year by year when you learned some other things like the 401k plan? And did you have the Roth IRA before the brokerage account?
It was around the same time. I don't remember exactly when. It was around the same time, yeah. So when I was in college, I started working for a Big Four accounting firm, and I met somebody who told me about getting more interest by using an online savings account. So that was like my first interaction with getting more money in the market, and then I started getting money market accounts. So my first year was like, okay, how can you get more than a penny that traditional banks are giving you? And then the second and third year was getting that Roth IRA and then the taxable brokerage account. Now, with the taxable brokerage account, I put money in and had no idea what to invest in. I was just looking at the prices. And I thought, oh, this is a good price, so this must be a sale, just like when we go shopping. Oh, I found the sale here. Well, I was wrong. It was the recession. Everything was so-called on sale. But the asset that I chose was even worse. It was like the worst investment that you could have bought during that time. And I purchased it because there was a line. I thought that there was activity, that meant that they would be around, that they were in demand because there was some type of activity going on at the bank. And I also thought that because the interest rates were, that they had higher interest rates than other traditional banks, that it was good. But no, that's the exact opposite. If a bank is giving you higher than average interest rates, that means that they need your money more. That so it's not necessarily a good thing. Like a premium quality bank is not going to pay you the highest interest rates. It typically didn't work like that in financial services. So that was my first, I guess, yeah, that was my college experience. And then I also got CDs because the CDs were like 5% at that time. So it was like playing around with a lot of different financial products. And then I moved my way up to the brokerage account and Roth IRA.
And I like that phrase, playing around with things, because I think it's important to do if you're learning. But talk to us about some other lessons learned once you started to do, you know, money market accounts and CDs. When did you get into, let's say, stocks, maybe mutual funds, ETFs, index funds? When did you then move into that space?
So I would say before I graduated, I had my encounter with the stock market where I lost most of my money because I chose bad investments. And then at work, I was introduced to 401ks, pension plans, employee stock plans, all of these benefits that come with working with a company, but I had no idea what any of that meant. Nobody in my family had 401ks. They had more defined pension plans, you know, and so I was really one of the first to have something like a 401k and these employee stock plans. So I didn't know how to navigate it. I just filled out the forms. I didn't really do much research. I didn't understand it. I didn't know who I could talk to, because let's talk about your female friends. Are you talking about money with your female friends? When I started my career, no. We talked about everything else.
Relationship.
We didn't talk about our salary.
Right. Relationship and trips, but not money.
Exactly. Exactly. And the person who told me about opening a brokerage account, it was a guy. Right? So typically, I would say, I did have those relationships where I could just call somebody up and say, hey, am I doing this right? But I did get connected with a financial advisor who helped me look over all my employer plans. Later on, maybe four years later, and make adjustments as needed.
Talk to us about how you went about finding your financial advisor, and how meeting with him or her helped open your eyes to things you just didn't even consider.
Yeah, so it was only a two-day meeting. One of my friends said, hey, do you have time to sit with this person and talk to them about their financial products? And so I sat down with them, and that was the financial advising that I received over the 2 days that I did it. So it wasn't really in depth. I've never really had an ongoing financial advisor. But that experience was game changing. In two meetings, they taught me about not spending all of my money, like actually putting together a budget. I'm looking at my income that's coming in, looking at my expenses, because you think that, oh, because the money is in my bank account, I can afford it. And they had me think about my goals long term, and that was game changing, because I never thought like, oh, well, if I want this, I need to maybe have this amount saved right now or invest this so that I can do this. So all those things I never talked about, but that two-day conversation changed my life and got me to peel back the layers of my personal financial life, because I knew there were certain goals I wanted to achieve. And I think that's what made me pay attention. If you really want something, you are either going to whine that you don't have it, whine about not having it, or make some changes in your life so that you can attract that next level that you seek.
Wow. I'm really just kind of stunned by your trajectory and your story thus far. And one question that I have, and this is, I'm biased because I've been a member of Better Investing for 20 years, and that really provided a certain level of support. And so my question to you is, after the 2-day meeting with your financial advisor, right now, between then and now, what have you built around yourself, or what organizations have you connected to either expose yourself to people that you can either call on or be connected to resources that are not always trying to sell you something, but trying to help educate you? What have you kind of created for yourself to help encourage and strengthen your investment journey?
Yes. So the main thing for me is becoming a writer. So as I was learning all this information, I wanted to know, well, how can I share this with other people? So I became a financial writer and started writing about dividends and the tax rewards that come from investing and just various stocks. And then through financial writing, I connected with all of these other people who were investing. And so now I talk to a lot of financial writers who are not only in the financial statements, they're looking at the charts, they're looking at the day-to-day movements in the market. And that's really, really changed my life, because before I got on this journey, I'll be honest, I didn't know people who were talking about this. I did not have a network. When I left my job, people thought I was crazy, for one. And so I couldn't connect with my friends who were working during the day, and I wasn't, I couldn't connect with them like I was able to. So I had to formulate a new group of people, and that came through writing.
Could you talk to us about some of the benefits? Because I know that, number one, that has to be scary to kind of grow up in this environment, in any environment. But once you recognize that your environment did not teach you what you thought you should have learned or that you wanted to know, stepping out and creating new friends or a new circle or a new network, talk to us a little bit about how you navigated that and what has kept you continuing to build a new group of friends that, in a sense, are where you want to be.
It is so scary. It is a challenge. Especially if you're an introvert. That's what I have to say. If you are an introvert and you're trying to go out there and make new friends, that's me. I'm an introvert. I can sit behind a computer all day, but going out, not my thing. And so I had to challenge myself when I stopped working. I had to start going to various business meetings and connecting with those people I knew who were entrepreneurs. I didn't necessarily leave all my friends behind, but I had to make sure my circle reflected where I wanted to go. And so I connected with people that I knew who were entrepreneurs. I was a part of small business associations. And then I did something really non-traditional. I actually wanted to challenge myself, and I packed up my bags after 7 months of leaving my job. I ended up traveling around the world with 100 other people singing and dancing, because I realized that I needed to get outside of my comfort zone if I was going to live this new way of living. And so I was like the only Black person from the United States and traveled with 100 other people, stayed with host families and learned different languages. And that just really exposed me to the different ways that I can connect with people. Even if we can't speak the same language, you can still connect with people just by being a genuine person and showing people that you care about them and that you're interested in them. And that really translated into the world of investing as well, because investing is all about having that curiosity. You have to want to know people and have this willingness to learn and grow. And by having those experiences with people that made me want to do it in the stock market too and learn about these CEOs who are running these companies.
Excellent. And I know that working in the business of financial writing is different than actually investing. So if you don't mind, could you talk to us about what your own personal investment philosophy is? How did it develop? What sort of things did you kind of do from a trial and error perspective to get to what your investment style is?
Yeah, so I would say financial writing is all about my investment philosophy. So I write about what I do. That's how I got into it. Like, I write about the Roth IRA because I made so many mistakes. I write about dividends because I absolutely love the fact that you can earn an extra stream of income in the stock market without lifting a finger. You get these rewards from companies, which I find amazing, but a lot of young people don't talk about dividends. They are typically reserved for retirees. So now every day when I am writing, I'm also researching, and that's helping me to fine-tune my investing philosophy. I would say writing because I'm researching every day. Like, I never knew that a writer had such a big responsibility. Like, you have to know what's going on, and you have to be able to communicate that to other people. So I would say writing has really caused me to go beyond what I initially thought investing was when I started and really see what other people do and try to mesh it into my style to see what works best for me.
Excellent. So far in your investment research, have you come across better investing?
I haven't looked into any companies and organizations. I have not.
Okay, excellent.
And that now I'm excited because I did, once you reached out to me, I did look it up and I was like, oh my gosh, this amazing organization exists and I didn't know about it. So I'm so excited to know more about it now.
Definitely. Yeah, we welcome you to join Better Investing and become a member. We have a 90-day free trial. We are a national nonprofit that focuses on investment education for both individuals and investment clubs for the past 70 years. Traditionally, and even right now, we really have led the investment space from the perspective of investment clubs. And so I'm not sure in your investment writing research if you've kind of come across investment clubs, but in a recent magazine, a Better Investing magazine, we featured clubs that's been in existence for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 plus years. And a lot of them exist and a lot of them are still operating with members. So I'm sure in the 90s, you probably even heard about the Beerstown Ladies, the group of women that kind of outperformed the market for a period of time. But they are still actually an operating investment club out of the Midwest, and they've always been members of Better Investing. So yeah, definitely check out Better Investing. And I don't know where you're physically. Are you physically located in Chicago?
I am now since the pandemic started. Yes.
Yeah. So I'll even connect you with the Chicagoland chapter of Better Investing. I know some people on the local board there. But each chapter, we have chapters all across the country that host educational events, and a lot of them even are free. And with COVID, a lot of them have even been online. So I think that, you know, you'll have great access to style of investing, which is more of a long-term successful investing approach. So thank you. Definitely. Thank you to Ann Newman for the question. Ms. Ann?
Of course. I'm sitting here just taking all of this in. Sharice and I had an awesome opportunity prior to the program started to share some things, and we have a lot of synergy between us. But what I'd like to do is go back and ask you about your early college years. And if you can share, well, that's one question. But the other question is, love reading, and if you can share a favorite book that maybe the audience might be interested in, since you do a lot of research. But going back to college, did you find that any of your friends that did or did not invest or have that kind of knowledge then that might be impacting you now in terms of having a similar kind of experience with this investment knowledge?
I didn't know any women who invested when I was in college.
Wow.
I only knew one person, this one person out of my entire college. And I didn't, I only knew one person. So that was just a lack of knowledge all the way around. Most people were just focused on getting internships. Investing was not a conversation. Money was not a conversation. And for me, my biggest goal was to fund my education. So my number one goal was to make sure I didn't have debt so that in my 20s and 30s, I could be able to invest and just live the life that I wanted without any responsibility. So I graduated college without no debt. I used my money to pay off all my student loan debt by 22. And that was my top goal in college. And then it left me with my 20s and 30s able to invest freely.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Now, what about family? Any of your family members caught the bug and have come on long after they see you doing what you're doing in terms of investment education?
Well, I think now, because the world has changed, I think everybody is just more open to it, especially with crypto. I think crypto has got people into investing. So people aren't, they may not be as excited about the long-term buy and hold, but they are excited about that crypto potential that's out there. So they are investing in that.
Wow. Well, I just want to, we did have some people come on a little later, and I just want to remind everybody that this is hashtag My Investing Story, and our special guest tonight is none other than Ms. Charlene Reinhart, and you can feel her spirit and her passion about what she does. She's a CPA, and she's the founder of Wealthy Women Daily and an author of Dividends Are a Queen's Best Friend. Charlene was selected to feature her local newsletter and Chicago Southsider on Facebook's new bulletin platform. So congratulations for that. And through the Chicago Southsider, she's creating an ecosystem of resources to help more businesses and people generate more revenue on the South Side of Chicago. And she's on a mission to impact more people by reaching, this is powerful, by reaching the publication's first 10,000 subscribers. So how's that coming?
I need more subscribers, so help me out.
Okay, why don't you, we want to remind everybody that we are volunteers of Bed Investing, and that we're not day traders, we're not stockbrokers, we're not financial planners, and want to make sure I continue to say that, and we're not selling anything. We are just simply sharing a investing story every single week, and everybody has a story, and our desire is to bring those stories to all of you. We do want to remind our listeners to please remember to comment, like, and share the show. And like she's saying, you can subscribe to her newsletter. You can put the link in the chat, please, Charisse. But also we want to ask, we have a lot of people who are listening in on social media and also on Zoom. So if you have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat so we can share them. And want to remind you that Bed Investing was formed and established in 1951 as a not-for-profit organization, 501c3 to be exact, and we do have a 90-day free membership. So if you go to the website at bedinvesting.org, right on the front page of the website, at the very, very bottom, you'll see the 90-day free membership. And so we want to continue to encourage you to continue to comment, like, and share. Now, let me just check. Ione, you check in the chat in case there are any questions there. So what I'd like to do is have you share with us a little bit about what does the future look like for you, Sharice, when it comes to investing in investment education? Well, wait, right after you become, so all of you do know that we did talk about her becoming a Fed Investing member before the program started. So she's very excited about the information she's been reading up on. But what does the future hold for you in terms of your vision for your life and career in this area of investment education?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking for ways to expand my impact, because I realize that different audiences, they need different things. They need different ways of getting the information. And so I'm just working on a curriculum and ways that I can collaborate with others in order to spread the word. That's my goal. I want to create something that lasts beyond me. And that's what I'm working on, legacy building, because we won't be here forever. So I can say, hey, I want to speak, I want to do this, but what will last beyond my years here on earth? And so I want to create books and courses and things like that that people can leverage.
Well, I would definitely continue to encourage you to connect with us here at Better Investing, because what you just said in terms of building legacy is exactly what the founders of Better Investing did when they had the same idea of sharing the knowledge and sharing the information. And what I love about this phenomenal organization, and we kind of talked about this before the program started, is that all of us started at square zero, basically. I mean, we all as volunteers started at the same place, attempting to learn, to earn, but then desiring to share that knowledge with others. Now, I'm curious, though, what kind of response have you been receiving from millennials?
In regards to investing?
Yes, in terms of investment education and sharing.
Millennials want to know. So I remember 5 years ago, a lot of millennials were really, they were afraid to invest because they were focused on student loan debt. That was the conversation that I constantly heard 5 years ago. But right now, I think people are open to investing and want to find ways to create passive income in the stock market or just buy and hold for the long term so that they can have some money available during retirement, because people have seen what the recession has done to people, or they see that maybe their family members don't have a lot of options right now or can't retire. So they are really tightening up their bag and making sure that they are equipped with the knowledge to invest.
Wow. Now, is that any different than, say, an older investor like baby boomers? Do you find much difference between the two?
I do. I did not see a lot of retirement investing. Typically, when I'm talking to millennials, it's about investing in a taxable brokerage account instead of maximizing the taxable deductions that we can take advantage of now, or making sure that we have a diversified class of tax-free, tax-deferred, and taxable income during retirement, like really creating that those buckets of retirement income. So I think a lot of millennials that I see in Chicago are really focused on the taxable brokerage account piece of it.
Wow.
But I see that changing now.
And baby boomers?
Baby boomers is about retirement. How can I make sure my money lasts? I don't want to outlive my investments, right? So what do I need to do now? How long do I have to work? Because people have realized that they don't have a retirement nest egg that will last them for 20 or 30 years. So they're trying to figure out what work do I need to do? How much do I need to invest? What are the best accounts for me? What's the safest account for me? Because I can't afford to lose any money. So those are the questions that retirees or baby boomers have right now.
Wow. Wow, this is amazing, because as I'm listening to you and just thinking about, we are all responsible for our financial future. And I think that, you know, many of us that's come on this program, we've come here because we did have some challenges. And I loved our guest from last week talked about how he had a situation where some money was stolen from him early in his career, and he decided to learn how to do it, not necessarily do it himself, but to become a student of the information. And that was, gosh, over 30 plus years ago. And so same thing, you know, just listening to you talk about, well, you know, I didn't know that the money I was not really investing, I was really saving it, but I thought I was investing. So I'm saying that to just kind of ditto the point you're making about the investment knowledge and sharing that begins to open the eyes, ears, hearts, if you will, but will we put our feet to our faith and get moving,
yeah,
right, into the direction to do something? And oftentimes that starts with reading, it starts with classes, seminars, and with technology and everything and platforms the way they are today, we have no excuse. And so I want to just use that as a ditto. Howard Johnson, I know, is on, and other people who are volunteers. Thank you, Dan Harder and Ann Newman and so many of you. But there's so many volunteers who are willing to literally volunteer to share that information. So with that thought in mind, are there any particular books that you've read that you think that might be beneficial? And I do see the author of, let me see, Ione, Mark Parks is here. And I have your book here, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us. But any particular book that you, or magazine or article that you'd like to share that you think that might be beneficial to our listeners?
So funny that you mentioned Mark Parks in his book, because that's what I was going to recommend, The Gift. It is truly a gift for anybody who reads it, because I don't remember ever reading a book that gives you your entire financial life in one book with all these different stories that you can relate to at one point in your life. I think every woman needs to have that book with them, because are you thinking about life insurance? Are you thinking about your 401k, right? There's no one-size-fits-all financial plan for women, but there are things that we all should be thinking about in order to prepare for what's ahead. And I feel like it was a good checklist for me as well. You know, anybody reading the book, you can check the box. Oh, I'm not doing that. Wait, that's something I need to incorporate into my financial life. So hands down, I would say that's a must-read book.
All right, Mark, you heard that. Now, did you already know Mark Parks?
I do, yes. Fellow CPA in Florida. He's in Florida, yes.
Yes, he is. All right, Mark, so you see we're giving you some kudos. But we actually, almost a year ago, Ione, I think, right? We actually ordered his book and gave it as gifts, Christmas gifts to a lot of friends. And so even though we're not selling any products, I just want to say if you're interested in a nice gift, it is a phenomenal, phenomenal read. So let me go back to Ione. We're going to be wrapping up in a minute. But I just want to also make sure that you share with individuals how they can reach you. So if you put that in the chat, and I know you're looking for subscribers, but we do know how social media works and how these platforms work. And if we don't ask, we don't get, right? Ione?
So questions. We have an audience question for you, Charlene, which is, what can be done differently to make sure that young people get the information early?
Have the conversation. Mm-hmm. I feel that money was closed off for the most part. Like, we may have received money for different things, but did we actually talk about what that money meant and represented? Did we talk about what bills need to be paid and why they needed to be paid? Do we talk about what do we do with this money we have left over at the end of the month? How do we allocate it? First, I do think those conversations need to be had in a home, and we really have to start normalizing what we want to materialize. We can't be afraid to talk about money with our peers, or just, I think those habits will naturally transfer on to the kids. Once they realize, oh, it's okay, then they'll start taking on certain habits, right? Kids are watching adults all the time, and they pick up these habits. So I think first we have to start in the home. Two, if we can incorporate it in the school system somehow, that would be great. In Chicago, there is a school that teaches kids K through 8 how to invest in the stock market, economics, Federal Reserve Bank, how to create your portfolio. Those things are taught in the schools. And so now kids have that basic understanding of this is how I can make money in the stock market, and this is how I can grow money in the stock market over the long term. So we just have to start normalizing it and making it a part of every day. One thing that I really love is when you go to the store, you see products. Talk about those companies who created the products and say, hey, did you know that you can invest and you can own a piece of this company, right? Like anytime you're buying anything, we're consuming things all the time. Anytime we're buying or using a service, talk about the company, the CEO, and introduce kids to how that relates to the money that they have now and what they could potentially have in the future.
Yeah, and I one thing that just came to mind, I like your response. One thing that came to mind is, well, I think two things. One is a lot of people don't have it to talk about it. You know, when we say talk about it in the home, a lot of people don't have the information or know the information enough to talk about it. And when I had that thought, it actually made me think about church. You know, many of us may not talk about church in the home or God outside of saying grace before we eat, but your parents probably took you with them to church.
Mm-hmm.
And by being exposed directly to, you know, the preacher and learning how to look up scripture in the Bible, you just got it through osmosis because you was exposed, you know. And I think that if we have a similar perspective about money, not feeling the burden of I need to learn it all on my own and then teach my kids, but no, I'm going to go to this financial literacy workshop, or I'm going to go to this better investing class, and I'm going to take my child with me so that my child can listen and learn. I think just that constant exposure is probably going to magnify the impact, because again, I think a lot of times families aren't talking about it because they don't know about it, you know, to be frank and honest. Yeah.
And sometimes the child can take the parent.
Well, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
One question that I have, if you could share, not that you, you know, I mean, I don't know how much you want to give away in a sense, but I'm really interested to hear more about your perspective on dividends. I know you talked a little bit about a lot of the millennial generation isn't thinking about dividends, but what really turned you on to dividends, and what do you try to share or at least get other people to see about the power of dividends and dividend investing?
That's a great question. For me, I really tapped into dividends when I left my job and I received a check in the mail. Didn't do any work, didn't know why I was receiving money for no reason because I didn't have a job. And I kept receiving it every 3 months. And I was like, wait, and then it was increasing. Like, okay, now I'm getting more money. I realized that was a dividend check. Because of all the investments I made in my employer's stock program, I was getting dividends. And I realized, oh, my God, if this one company will give me dividends and I'm not even working for them, how many other companies would give me dividends? So I started studying financial statements, analyzing these companies and the dividend potential that they had, because I realized you can calculate how much you need in dividend income to fund your entire lifestyle. So if you have dividends, you will never have to worry about time or money. And that was one thing that was important to me. I was in this program, and we had an essay prompt. The question was, if time and money was not an issue, what would you do? I said I would travel around the world, salsa dancing, just live my dreams for some time. I ended up taking a five-year sabbatical because I learned the power of investing. I didn't work a full-time job for over 5 years. And I realized if you know how to invest, you'll never have to fight for a job, worry, work out of desperation, you'll always have opportunities because there are always investments out there. And for me, Dividend was like that safety net, that cushion. As long as I'm a long-term investor, I can get paid for being in the marketplace. I can have all these other investments where I may buy and sell, but my dividends, I get those if I'm a long-term investor. And so that was a way for me to get rewarded in the stock market and really own my life. You can have income that pays all of your bills. You don't have to do anything else. So I think that was like when the light bulb came off and I realized it's just a simple calculation. I will never have to worry about money again if I can calculate how much I need in dividends. And for me, I do a lot of individual stock investing. I do deep dives on companies. That's why I became a financial writer, because I had a newsletter. I was analyzing all of these companies. I was going to the investor earnings calls. I was reading the financial statements, word for word, annual reports. I was studying the leaders. I was studying their executive compensation package. I was doing a lot of this deep dive, and that's why I started doing financial writing, because I realized, wow, doing all this research for me, maybe other people can benefit too. But most of my research was dividend-paying companies when I started, because I worked for a dividend-paying company, and I understood the financials, and so it was easy for me to analyze dividend-paying companies.
So when you got your first dividend, and I don't know how many years ago that was that your first time realizing that money could work for you?
That was my first time realizing that, yeah, I can get paid in the stock market without selling my stocks. I always thought that I had to sell my investments in order to get paid. I had to benefit only from capital appreciation when the stock goes from one price to the next. That's all I knew. I didn't realize that I could also get an extra stream of income while I patiently waited for years and years and years for my money to grow in the markets.
So in developing this dividend philosophy and really strategy, because this is how you're investing, how has value investing kind of come up in your research around starting to invest more and more in dividends? And if so, could you talk to us about what value investing is and how that probably tying into your dividend strategy?
Yeah. So, you look at value stocks, growth stocks. Those are like the two basic types of stocks that you can invest in, two categories of stocks that you can invest in for most people. So value stock, hey, you see a stock that the market is not valuing at its market level, at its fair value does not match the potential of this company. So it's undervalued. And so in that analysis, you're using financial ratios to determine the true value of the company. You're using PE ratio, and you're looking at cash flow. You're looking at debt to equity. You're just using all these financial ratios to determine the value of the company. So there are valuation ratios, liquidity ratios, all these ratios out there that help you determine the value of the company. And if the value that you calculate is less than that fair value out there in the market, hey, we have something that's undervalued. So that does help me get dividends at a discount. We can say that.
I love that phrase, dividends at a discount. I'm really interested a little bit more in this dividend strategy, especially because you mentioned that you so far you've noticed that there are a lot of, let's say, baby boomers who have kind of reorganized their portfolio to have this kind of dividend strategy to live off their dividends. But talk to us about what you tell a 30-year-old or 40-year-old about this dividend strategy, and what is that calculation? Because I know I have a friend that, you know, has said, oh, I want to live off of my dividends. And my first question is, how much do you have? Because it's almost like an annuity. You know, you may want to live off an annuity, but you have to have a lot of money to buy the annuity for it to be worth your while. So could you talk to us about that formula and what you would advise a 30 or 40-year-old person that wants to develop a dividend strategy like you?
Yeah, so there are two pieces of the equation. And I think sometimes we don't talk about that. There's income and there's also expenses. Now, when I talk about dividend income, people don't even think about the expense side. If you can reduce your expenses, if you don't have a lot of expenses, it won't require a lot of money for you to get dividends that funds your lifestyle, right? If you don't have any expenses. And it's so easy to do that. Most of my money goes towards dividends. I really don't have any expenses right now. So my paycheck that I'm getting, I just started working. I just put all the money in the market. But the strategy is position yourself to save more. The more you save and invest, the more options you will have. So how do I increase my savings rate from 10%? That was one of the flaws I learned when I was younger. Save a little bit of your money, 10%. Why can't I save more than I spend, right? That's something that's really important to me. If I got a paycheck that's $1,000, $800 might go towards investing and I might keep $200 because I want to be in a position where I don't need money to live off of, where I'm taking care of my future self. So a 30-year-old, I would say, make sure that you are financially good right now. What I mean is look at your budget. Look at your debt. Get that debt off your books as fast as you can so that you can use more of that money to invest. So if you are decreasing your debt, you're going to increase your investment. And it doesn't happen overnight. It happens through consistency. Every week, think about allocating something. Automate your decisions, right? I automatically have money sent from one account to a brokerage account. I don't even have to do it. It just happens naturally every single week. So automate it. But also, to motivate you as a 30-year-old, you want to think about what type of life do I want to have later? Because that's going to determine how much it may cost you. You want a financial target to keep you going. So once you have that target, now we can work backwards to see, okay, what stocks do I want to invest in? What is going to give me the return that I am looking for? Do I want real estate investment trust in my portfolio? Because I know that they'll give me at least 90% of their earnings. They are required to give out 90% of their income in the form of dividends to maintain their status as a REIT. So do I want that income, and what could that mean for my tax situation? You want to think about all those things, but as long as you know your end target, guess what? You can work backwards and determine what type of consistency you need to have to achieve your goals.
Excellent. Two questions I have. One is, when did you become so aggressive as an investor? When I say aggressive, I mean in the sense of thinking like that, you know, whoa, I could actually be saving and investing even more than I spend. Can you recall when that happened, or if you maybe read something or met someone that helped to shift your mindset to think like that?
Also, we have a couple of questions in the chat.
I know. It's got a one by one.
I think I started reading a lot of books. I forgot the name of the book. Millionaire. The Millionaire Next Door. Yes, The Millionaire Next Door. And they were talking about how millionaires really live and how they don't spend their money like that. And so that made me start thinking like, okay, maybe I can decrease my expenses. But also on the other side of things, maybe I can get this income in that can help me fund those expenses in the future so that I can just have an easy life in the future. I would say it's the books, the conversations I've had with people, the conferences. So 5 years ago, I started going to investing conferences. I would go to REIT World so that I could dive into REITs with these investment managers. I went to Invest Conference in New York. I went to Morningstar Investment Conference. So I went to a lot of conferences that exposed me to individuals who did this for a living. And that made me think like, oh, wow, investing can take me to the next level. Like, this is a different world out here. People are living off their dividends. And guess what? I can do it too, because there's no discrimination. They don't care about my color. They don't care if I wake up. They don't care
exactly
what I'm thinking. I get my dividends no matter what. That changed my life.
And I think as a Black woman, especially, you know, for all those that spend a whole lot of energy in this diversity space trying to convince white folks, it's such a beautiful feeling to be paid where race is not involved, sex is not involved, color, creed, religion, none of that is involved. When you talk about equity, the only inequity is not knowing. But once you know, I mean, it's the best. They can't fire you. They can never fire you.
Nope.
It's a beautiful thing. So thank you so much for bringing that up. One last audience question that we have is, Could you speak a little bit about REITs, what they are, your perspective on them? I know you talked a little bit about it in your last response, but how REITs kind of connect to dividends and what's your perspective on them?
Yeah, so I love REITs, real estate investment trusts. They usually offer a return that's higher than your typical blue chip stocks. So people who are looking to live off their dividends, they might find it easier to invest in REITs. It's also a source of sustainable and stable income because the REITs are getting their money from properties, income properties. They're getting their money every month, and they're passing it on to you as investors. And so it's more of a reliable source of income that you can count on, because if they don't give you your money, they won't maintain their status as a REIT. And for me, I thought it was great because I wanted to learn more about real estate. I wanted to invest in real estate, but I didn't want to go through the process of getting a loan and finding a house, finding an agent, and
being a tenant and all of that.
Exactly, all of that. I could delegate that responsibility to somebody else. All they have to do is make sure I get paid. That's it. So that sounded pretty cool to me.
I love it. And thank you so much for your answer. Thank you so much for your experience and really conveying. I know we're only here for an hour, but I think the amount of information that you shared, the amount of resources, and really, again, just being vulnerable and talking to us about some of your past mistakes, a few of your wake-up calls, and how over a period of time you've been able to change your mindset, change your environment, change your network, and really start living that life that you dream. So I guess my last question is, I'm pretty sure that, you know, when you grew up, you probably thought that you were going to have to work a job and wait till 60 for retirement. Are you basically retired now and living the lifestyle you want because of access to this information and actually doing it and, you know, living off a dividend strategy? Are you there? And if so, kind of what else is next?
Yeah, so I took a 5-year sabbatical, and so I just finally got a full-time job 3 months ago. I was scared. I didn't want to do a job, but somebody told me that I would be able to work on healthcare and insurance, and I love that type of stuff. But most importantly, I would be able to give jobs to other people. My job is giving money to other people, hiring other people. So I was like, okay, I like that. I could do that. So I am doing that right now, but for 6 years, I didn't have a full-time job, and I was just going to travel and just continue living. But I'm excited to be in this position where I have options, and that's what investing gave me. Investing allowed me to say, hey, I'm doing this because I desire to do this. I'm not desperate for it. I don't have to. If somebody wants to fire me, who cares? I'm going to do my best work, and I'm going to bring me to the table, but I'm not going to deal with the other things that come with people that come when you think you have to have something in order
put
to
up
survive.
With, exactly.
That's my goal, to continue to use investing to live that life that I dream of and help other people do the same.
And, you know, I'm so glad you put it like that, because I think, to be honest, even though people may want this lifestyle, it is scary to have these options, because then you become responsible for finally doing what you said you were going to do, or, you know, and nobody else is living like that, you know. But I think you hit it right on the head when you started to read the type of books, meet different people, and travel and attend conferences where you met people that were living their lives as investors. It really opened you up to, oh, this is possible. This is the type of life I want to live. So thank you so much for sharing that, because I think you are one of the few, if only, people we have interviewed that really is living a young life as an investor.
Well, thank you for having me. I love what you two are doing, or everybody is doing, at Better Investing. And so I'm so happy to support it and can't wait to watch it continuously grow.
And to join. And we did have, I know Ione, you said last, but there was a question in the chat about investment clubs, if you had any experience or exposure to the clubs.
No, I have not had exposure to investment clubs.
Okay, so we'll talk about that offline. That's another subject for another day. This is going to be an excellent, a phenomenal journey. And so I'm going to speak life into our new volunteer for Better Investing, and we will be right there by your side every step of the way. So if you have any closing comments, either one of you, Ione.
Thank you so much, Charlene. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us and listening in. And again, you have been listening to another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. And our special guest tonight has been none other than Ms. Charlene Reinhart, CPA and founder of Wealthy Women Daily. And so, Charlene, thank you so very much. We want to remind everybody, please remember to comment, like, and share the show, and also subscribe to her newsletter. All right, everybody, thank you, and we'll see everybody next week, same time, same place, right here on social media and on this platform, Zoom. Thank you, everybody. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.